Thank you, Henry. No, I didn't deliberately plagiarize Jim Bell's title, although it's about the same. But I'm going to talk about, actually, just about the area around Meridiani Planum. This is Victoria Crater, and I'm going to argue today that there is soil, a soil body on Mars, akin to what Earth scientists would be familiar with. And so I'll try to go through that discussion for you and show some data this morning. So Mars and water. This is Gale Crater, where the Curiosity rover is presently. This has been an illuminating area for thinking about fluvial history and aqueous history on Mars. So this image shows that there's basically fluvial stream deposits. There's rounded gravels. There's conglomerates associated with these things. There's dried lake beds. There's playa deposits. There's alluvial fans. There's clay minerals have been found at Gale Crater and all over Mars. So the question is, why aren't there soils left on Mars in the Earth science sense? And so I'm going to start by describing what I view soil as from an Earth scientist perspective. This is a landscape shot in the Atacama Desert. There's no plants. There's just about zero biology here, and there's been zero biology for millions of years since the Miocene, when this alluvial fan was deposited. So I would argue that soil is a regionally extensive in situ diagenic feature of a planetary surface that's analogous to a geological formation. And this is like part two of the Soil Science Society definition of soil. And the USDA also goes out of its way in its soil taxonomy to say that soils do not require life. And that would exclude places on Earth like the Atacama Desert and the dry valleys of Antarctica for having soil. So this soil here, what we're looking at, we're looking down at the top of these sulfate polygons. I'd also disagree with Henry that soil has to be unconsolidated, because this is completely consolidated with sulfate. So soil has a range of characteristics, but it does reflect this long-term in-situ weathering and changes in the chemistry that are associated with petrogenic processes in some water. So soil is largely, in my view, the most common geochemical process on Earth. And so if we're looking at a similar terrestrial planet where we know there's been water around, thinking about soil processes or that soils might be left would be an important first step. This is Meridiani Planum, and I just used the definition of soil that's been used in a lot of the papers that have come out from the rover missions, where the term Martian soil is used here to denote any loose, unconsolidated materials. So more or less commonly, Jim was talking about, the focus has been on the chemistry, mineralogy, and origin of some of these loose aeolian deposits. But when we look at these exposures of the underlying stratum, commonly that's considered to be a first cut bedrock. But this is where, from an Earth scientist perspective, one would look to think about whether there's a vertical profile embedded in this and what it can tell us about the Martian history. So Meridiani Planum is kind of, if you're a soil scientist from Earth that had access to data from Mars, this is exactly where you'd want to be, because there's two craters, Endurance Crater and Victoria Crater, just very close by, that have been intensively explored by the rover Opportunity and the MIR team. There's been, in the first 2,000 sols, I think, there's been over 200 total chemical analyses that have been done on the profiles of the craters and then on the interspaces in between. So there's a lot of information, probably more than we would get in an earth science study of a landscape like this over the course of a few years. So to set the stage, we're going to look at the geochemistry of these craters today, these crater profiles. Endurance and Victoria are about 6.2 kilometers apart. The craters themselves are believed to have formed just a few million years ago. Gollenbeck and others have published a couple papers on this. The small size of the craters, the lack of erosion suggests that they're relatively young geologically. Victoria Crater is about 10 meters higher in section than Endurance Crater. And so the sediments that form this plain are probably Noachian in age, basically Archean on Earth's sort of time scale. But there's been subsequent erosion modifying the land surface that might be early Hesperian in age So this is sort of mid-Precambrian land surface in some ways, if you want to think about it in terms of Earth. Both of these have almost identical parent materials I'll talk about. It's a weathered basalt mixed with evaporite sulfate sands, and so as we're going to see, they're almost identical at both craters. They form both from, Endurance has dune deposits as well as subaqueous fluvial deposits, whereas Victoria has been described in a couple papers as consisting largely of dune deposits, and so there is an evidence of at least subaqueous processes at Victoria Crater. Now, there's been a couple different papers published about the nature of the geochemical profiles at Endurance. McLennan and others in 2005 argued that the salt profiles that we're going to look at later were caused by upward migration of water from near-surface groundwater. In 2008, we argued that it's downward meteoric water that has moved the salts and created the geochemical profiles. And today I'll compare the geochemistry of Endurance to Victoria, along with the new data that's been released about Victoria Crater and some new information we've learned about soils and alternating aqueous environments on Earth. So I'm going to argue that there's a regional hyperarid soil embedded in the landscape at Meridiani Planum, and I'm going to present to you, first of all, some new evidence, observational evidence for the direction of fluid flow that you can derive from solute profiles based on what we've learned on Earth, and then look at recently released geochemical data for Victoria Crater. So on Earth, we're going to look, one of the things that's sort of fed back to me in my study of Mars is to get Earth analogs that provide better information that we can use to definitively say something about what we see on Mars. So one of the things I've been looking for in the Atacama Desert, which is our closest landscape to Mars, is looking at soils both formed by downward water and soils formed by upward migrating water to look at the sulfate and chloride profiles as sort of indicators of direction of fluid flow. This is a Miocene age diluvial fan. It's accumulated enormous amounts of dust and salt over time. It's undergone inflation. You can see the sulfate polygons here that have formed as a result of it. But it has a very distinctive, repeatable, and common profile of basically an enrichment of sulfate up near the surface, and the more soluble chlorides and nitrates migrate down further in the profile and embed and impregnate the underlying fluvial sediments. This is an area that has 1 millimeter of mean annual precipitation per year. So to get these profiles, it takes way more than that 1 millimeter of precipitation a year. So it has to take occasional rainfall events, maybe on millennial time scales, of 10 to 100 times this 1 millimeter per year to vertically separate these salts. Even though the mean annual precipitation is incredibly low, there must be sporadic events that sort of stretch out this profile and separate the salts vertically beyond what this small amount of annual rainfall can do. These are one of the common landforms in the Atacama Desert. They're basically salars or salt-encrusted playas. This is an area where there's presently upward migrating water. My student Kari Finstad just finished her dissertation on it, and there's a paper in Press and Geoderma on these soils. But the interesting thing is the salt profiles are essentially reversed from the downward migrating soils we saw earlier. This is a 20 or 30 centimeter thick sodium chloride crust. If you look at the chloride concentration, huge bulge of up to 30% by weight up here at the surface. And then the sulfates are concentrated lower in the profile. They fall out first as the upward migrating fluid evaporates and the salts drop out as it's moving upward. Okay, Victoria Crater, there's been about 2, 3, or 4 papers in JGR that have come out on it. I'm going to use some figures from Hayes et al. In JGR in 2011. Victoria Crater, there's some beautiful exposures that have been revealed, and I just want to sort of show you what was interpreted by Hayes and others. This is the impact crater. This is the ejecta from the impact. This is essentially the original land surface that you can see from other photos of the rover Opportunity traversing across the landscape. The authors here and in other papers identified or recognized that this is what they call a diagenesis zone here, and I'll talk a lot more about that. And then beneath this is bedded, cross-bedded sandstone with a bunch of vertical fractures in it. Now, the chemistry I'll talk about doesn't come from this profile. There's another exposure on the crater where the rover could access much more easier, but essentially these strata will be part of the geochemical profiles that I'll take a look at. So what I want to ask today or go over in terms of the geochemistry of the profiles at Meridiani Planum, are the geochemical profiles at Endurance and Victoria, which are 6 kilometers away and at different parts of the stratigraphic section, are they similar? And if they are, do they represent upward or downward migration of water? And then how much water was involved in this alteration, both from a minimum as well as a maximum perspective? So this is a picture of Endurance Crater, but it shows the from Clark et al. In 2005, shows the traverse of the rover going down here, the points that it sampled with the elemental analyzer. I should mention that the data I'm going to be talking about are ratted samples where the surface crust has been ground off, so we're getting at the more pristine, intact geochemistry of the underlying sediments in this case. And this is the geochemical profile at Victoria Crater. Didn't sample quite as thick of a profile, but we can put these both into perspective on a similar graph. Now, I want to say that I'm going to talk about the soil chemistry using tau values. Now, not all of you are familiar with this. In earth science, what is commonly done if you're looking at total chemical analyses and trying to understand gains and losses, usually what we try to do is tie our samples of, if we're interested in calcium, we tie it relative to some element that's immobile. And then on the APX analyses from Mars, titanium is aqueously the most immobile element that's being measured in the data set. So we're comparing everything to titanium using that as a reference element. And then also we're using the base of the geochemical profile as sort of the reference point, looking at gains and losses of an element in each of these profiles relative to the lowest layer in the profile. So in tau values, this is the depth of the sediments in centimeters, so it goes down to almost 5 meters over here at Endurance Crater. These are the tau values. Tau values less than zero are losses of that element. Tau values greater than zero are gains of the element. One is equal to 100% gain in the element relative to the lowest layer. The interesting thing is, we talked about this in 2008, is that for both craters, the tau values for silicon and then also for aluminum and iron, which I'm not showing, which are essentially the basalt matrix of this dirty sandstone, are essentially constant or zero all the way through the profile, meaning that it's a very homogeneous geochemically and mineralogically type of sediment at the deposition during the original deposition. Now, this is not going to be what we see when we look at the more mobile elements like sulfate, SO3, chlorine, and bromine in the next samples or next profiles. So both sites, surprisingly, have identical SO3 and chlorine profiles with depth. And so basically here are the tau values. The dark or the black and gray symbols are the SO3 concentrations for Endurance and Victoria, or the tau values. You can see they're both heavily enriched in SO3 at the surface relative to their basal levels, and that the enrichment declines with depth. They're both very depleted in chlorine relative to their basal depth at the surface. They both show a crossover point a little below 100 centimeters and then cross over to enrichment zone and then go back down to zero at greater depths in the profile. This is, if we take a close analogy or a close look at that earth profile I looked at earlier, this would be evidence of downward water migration. One of the arguments made, though, on Mars is that the sulfates, unlike on Earth, are not all calcium sulfates. There's magnesium sulfates, iron sulfates that have higher solubility. So I looked at the comparison of magnesium and calcium, which if you do the molar calculations, magnesium and calcium are co-equal with SO3. So there's obviously all the sulfate is largely in the form either of very soluble magnesium sulfate or less soluble calcium sulfate. And if you look at the magnesium to calcium profiles, the ratio of tau values going down through the profiles, the surface is largely a more calcium-rich sulfate. And then as you go down with depth, it switches over to a more magnesium-rich sulfate, which again is consistent with a downward vertical separation of salts based on their solubility. There's some other features that are very interesting from a earth scientist perspective, especially if you work in very arid environments. It's the polygonal cracking up here in this diagenesis zone. And there's been a number of, there's sort of a subsection of the geosciences devoted to desiccation cracking. A lot of these studies have been done in the laboratory, but of course they are correlated and tied to field observations. But one of the things that is observed in desiccation cracking is the thickness to width dimensions due to desiccation are usually on the order of 1 to 2. And in the Atacama Desert, going back to one of those earlier slides that we saw, the width to ratio in Atacama soils also varies between 1 and 2. So what I did some simple measurements of horizon 1 here and horizon 2. Horizon 1 usually has a ratio of about 1 to 1. Layer 2 has a slightly longer dimension relative to width, but they fall within what we see on Earth in terms of desiccation cracking and shrinking and swelling due to hydration and dehydration of sulfates. So it would be consistent with the idea that this surface has experienced multiple stages of wetting and drying, shrinking and swelling. In relation to that, if you look down at the surface from a plan view, you can start to see some evidence or some sense of the shapes of the polygons looking down at the surface. And then in experiments on Earth where clays or other materials have undergone repeated and wetting and drying, the first drying step usually produces sort of a rectilinear sort of or right angle sort of tendency for cracking, whereas if the material goes through multiple wetting and drying cycles, it starts to develop a more hexagonal looking shape, very similar to what you see in multiple outcrops exposed or seen by the rover Opportunity at Meridiani Planum. Yes? Okay. So I'm almost done. So the soil of Meridiani Planum is probably, if you're an earth scientist or a soil scientist, it's probably a typical petrogypsid, sulfate cemented aridisol. To move that salt around, you can do some very simple calculations. To take all that sulfate and chloride, move it down through the soil, it takes about 2 to 4 meters of water to dissolve and move it downward. But if you think about a hyperarid soil on Earth that's 4 or 5 million years old, that has a millimeter of rainfall a year, the amount of water that these soils could have seen could be kilometers of water because of the fact that a lot of that water isn't going to make an impact on the characteristic of the landscape. So to summarize, there appears to be a regional soil profile at Meridiani Planum. All the salts indicate the direction of water movement is largely downward. And then finally, I would like to articulate from a perspective of interacting what we know about on Earth to Mars, we won't find soil in a sort of geological sense or earth science sense unless we have a deliberate plan or have a preconceived idea that they might be there and have a plan to look for the results of these processes. Thank you.